That actually sounds really good.
Now let me just pour it into the glass.
It just went for so long. Everybody, welcome back to Banter Box, a review podcast run by the team here. I just forgot the word podcast.
A review podcast.
That wasn't even an edit. That was just me screwing up. A review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week, we will be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this week, we watched Fight Club. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists I have with me to help break this down today.
As always, it is Samuel.
As per the usual, it's John.
And it's Robert Paulson. How are you guys doing?
Just kidding, it's Russell. Oh my gosh.
You are so cringe.
Listen, guys.
Russell's a little excited
today. This is one of my favorite movies of all time. I requested it, and I couldn't be more excited to talk about it and to hear what everyone else has to say.
Well, why don't you tell us, since you were the only one who had actually seen it before out of all of us, how did you get exposed to it?
You know, I think the first time I ever watched this movie, as with a lot of my favorite movies, I think this happened like with another one. I think it happened with The Last Samurai, where it was late at night. I was just like looking through DirecTV's like list, and just Fight Club came up, and I had heard about it before. And I had kind of like seen a little scene from earlier, like one of the big like ending scenes where he's like fighting himself and like throwing himself like down the stairs and stuff. And I saw that like really early on, so I kind of like was exposed to just that part, and I was like, what the heck's happening? I was just confused. But then later I saw it on TV and I was like, okay, I'll just watch it.
Yeah.
And then I'm just like, holy crap. This movie is insane.
It definitely wasn't what I was expecting. So Samuel, I know you said you had it spoiled for you.
Yeah, so I...
Which, by the way, if you've never seen Fight Club, spoilers, we're going to ruin it all, spoilers, and we're breaking the first two rules of Fight Club, and we're talking about Fight Club.
So, if you've never seen it, like, don't click off. Just pause.
Yeah, just pause the episode.
Watch the entire movie, and then press play again.
Right.
But don't leave the video.
Because we will spoil it for you in about 10 seconds, probably, when Samuel starts talking.
Yes. So, I watch a lot of YouTube. I watch a lot of Watch Mojo's top 10 lists, and so several years ago, I watched one of their lists that was like top 10 movie twists of all time, and it spoils the big twist of Fight Club. So that's all I really knew about it. I knew that it was one of my cousin's favorite movies, and it's one of Aaron's favorite movies, and I knew the twist. So that was my experience, I guess, coming in.
And I believe John and I had the exact same experience coming in.
I only ever saw that bit where they explain the rules of Fight Club, and that's it.
Yeah, I think I'd seen that clip where they explained the rules, and then I felt like I had seen the scene. There was another scene like in the Fight Club that I felt like I had seen before. Maybe it was the one where he was like, I feel like a lot of people have been breaking the rules of Fight Club because I see a lot of new faces or something.
Yeah.
It was one of those scenes that I was like, I think I've seen this before. Just like someone played it for me or something.
Yeah, those...
And those scenes are also have become memes over time.
Yeah.
The only scenes from Fight Club that have become memes but are the basement scenes.
Yeah.
So.
Because all those scenes in the basement are definitely the most iconic scenes in the movie because that is the Fight Club.
Yeah.
Is that like area. So it's kind of like, it's synonymous with that sort of, you know, you get it.
Yeah.
The most iconic scene.
But yeah, last night Russell was like, so I know that Samuel knows, but John and Danielle, what do you know about this movie? And we both had the exact same amount of knowledge, which was just, we know the first rule of Fight Club is don't talk about Fight Club, and that's all we know about Fight Club.
And I was just like, yes.
But yeah, so this one came out in 1999. You're the worst. It was directed by David Fincher and written by Jim, I don't really, Ouls, maybe is his last name. It's It's UHLS, so I think it's Ules.
Jim Ules, probably.
Jim Ules. Yeah. And then, of course, it was based on the novel by Chuck. I believe it's pronounced Palahniuk.
Yeah, Palahniuk.
Palahniuk. And it stars Brad Pitt as Tyler Durden and Edward Norton just as narrator. And you can watch this for free on Tubi. You can watch it with a Hulu Premium or Sling TV subscription, or you can buy or rent it on Vudu, Apple TV, YouTube, Prime Video, or Google Play. And the IMDb summary for this says, an insomniac office worker and a Devil May Care soap maker form an underground fight club that evolves into much more. Samuel.
So I'm going to actually start with the writer today, because this writer has two film credits ever.
Wow. Okay.
This film and a movie called Jumper. I'd never heard of it. It was an indie film.
I've never heard of Jumper.
I think I've heard the name, but I don't think I've ever seen it.
And that is all I could find out about this guy.
Wow. Well.
The director, on the other hand, I've never heard of.
Yeah.
I've never heard of his name, David Fincher. That being said, there was not a single movie on his filmography I had not heard of.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay.
So first off, he was a crew member on Return of the Jedi.
All right.
Which I just got to put in there because Star Wars. But his directorial debut was Alien 3.
Wow. Ooh. Okay.
Nice.
He then directed Seven.
Oh, Seven.
Wow. That fits.
The Game.
Okay.
Zodiac.
Oh, wow.
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
Yep.
Dang. The Social Network.
Oh, wow.
The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Dang.
And Gone Girl.
Wow. That's I mean, honestly, intense. So many of those fit in the same vein.
This man.
Very close, yeah. Same vibe.
His films have been nominated for 40 Academy Awards.
Wow.
Well, including this one, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have been shocked if this one didn't, like, at least get nominated for something, at the very least.
I still think we should add that on to, like, the things we do. I think, I don't know if there's something we should replace because most of our bits are good, but I think we should do a, like, did this movie win any awards?
Yeah, I can whether start it be good or bad, whether it be, end.
And we don't have to, like, you know, did it win any MTV awards, but, like, you know, the big ones,
like,
Academy
like
Awards,
or
like Razzies.
If it's like Troll 2.
Yeah.
Golden Globe is for movies too, right?
Golden Globe, I believe,
it's for
is
film and TV.
Yes, for film and
but
TV.
Yeah, we could do, like, you know, all the, you know, the Academy, the Emmys, all of those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that we really do much TV, but yeah. Anyway, right. Moving on.
Yeah. Well, if you want to maybe look at what this one won for this episode, so we can toss it in.
I will do.
Yeah. So, Russell.
Yeah.
I'd like to give you your little soapbox before we dive into the plot here, if you have anything that you want to talk about before we jump into all the spoilers.
The one thing that I want to say is that this movie, if you're looking for something in it, you're going to find it. You know what I mean? Like, if you're hunting for a message, you're going to find the message. But, like, it's also important to pay attention to the undertones, because a lot of what this movie promotes is very much that sort of, like we're all cogs in a machine sort of thing.
Very, like, anti-commercialism kind of thing.
But then, at the very end, it kind of, like, flips all that on its head, sort of, by, like, the narrator, like, realizing that, like, that really isn't the case.
Oh, what?
Well, this movie had one unintended consequence.
Oh?
It started a bunch of actual fight clubs.
Oh,
and,
of course.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
There was a college student who became, like, a domestic terrorist who said that he was directly inspired by Fight Club, and yeah.
Well,
of
no,
course.
I mean, there was a scene, so...
Not too good.
Like I just said, if you're looking for a certain thing, you will find it.
Well,
and he found it.
There was a scene. It was in the fun facts, but I don't think I actually put it, like, in my things at the end. The scene where narrator's boss finds the rules of Fight Club, like, in the copier.
Yeah.
And he, like, stands up and threatens him. Apparently, in the original screenings, everyone really loved that scene. It was tested, it screen tested super well with a bunch of people. Like, it was, like, a comedic scene that people were into. And then Columbine happened.
Yeah.
And ever since then, it's been dead silence whenever anyone watches that scene.
Yeah.
And, like, apparently because it happened, like, right before or, like, in the middle of the run of Fight Club in theaters.
Yeah.
Everyone started, like, you know, there were a lot of articles about how it was, like, in bad taste and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, before that, no one thought that. But, like, Columbine really changed everything with that.
Yeah, that scene, you know, like thinking of like the mass, like, shooting, like, sort of, like, mentality is a lot more intense.
Mm-hmm.
But that almost, like, changes the message in a subtle way too. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's so much to unpack.
Well, I got to one review that I'm definitely going to read that, like, okay. So, I'll kind of, like, hint at what it's about, because something that I thought the entire movie, like, was, oh, this is very similar to American Psycho.
Yeah.
In the sense that anything and everything that happens could and might be happening in his head.
Yeah.
Because he's the most unreliable narrator.
Yeah, literally.
Like, yeah, like both main characters of American Psycho and A Fight Club are completely unreliable narrators. You can't trust anything you're watching.
Yeah.
And the guy, the review basically, it didn't say exactly that, but was saying, like, you know, it's crazy because most of the movie probably didn't happen. And I was like, wait, what? And he was like, yeah, I don't think most of the movie happened. And I was like, and I'll read it later, but it freaked me out for a second. I was like, wait, but I thought, okay, we're going to get into it. But he
Black Swan, like that same sort of, like, you're not sure what's real and what's not.
Yeah, where you're watching it and you're just like, I have no clue. Yeah,
which is why I like Black Swan so much, because it reminded me of this movie and I was like, I love it.
No, like I really like unreliable narrators. Yeah, that's not anything I've ever had a complaint about, because I like when I can be yoinked around a little bit, and like something, and especially Marla being a very different character through the whole second half of the movie
than in the first half.
Like, you sort of, like, it brings you to a place of like, okay, so which Marla is the one he made up and which Marla is the real one? Like,
I know obviously this came way before, but the movie that actually reminded me of a little bit was Joker.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yep. Same vein.
Yep.
Really similar.
This movie's so awesome.
But I'm going to go ahead and jump into this plot here. Okay. So, the narrator, an automobile recall specialist, is unfulfilled by his job and possessions and suffers from chronic insomnia. To cure this, he attends support groups, posing as a sufferer of diseases. His bliss is disturbed when another imposter, Marla Singer, begins attending the same groups. The two agree to split which groups they attend. On a flight home from a business trip, the narrator meets soap salesman Tyler Durden. The narrator returns home to find his apartment and all his belongings have been destroyed by an explosion. Disheartened by the loss of his material goods, he calls Tyler and they meet at a bar. Tyler tells him he is trapped by consumerism. In the parking lot, he asks the narrator to hit him and they have a fist fight. They find the experience cathartic and agree to do it again. Apparently, that scene, when he hits him in the ear, was not... he was supposed to fake hit him.
Yeah.
But David Fincher pulled Norton aside and was like, actually hit him. Like, go ahead. Just actually hit him. And so he did. And, like, you can see, like, as Brad Pitt is, like, screaming in pain, that Norton is, like, trying not to laugh in the corner because, like, it's just so funny to him that he's like, why? Like, why did I just do that?
There's so many, like, little tiny things you can miss at the very beginning of this movie. Tyler Durden appears in the movie like 4 or 5 times.
Yep.
I mean, the most obvious thing was when they were at the airport and they passed each other, like on the little escalator conveyor things.
But even before then, there are like
flashing and
like
out
one in the very beginning, like there's a lingering shot on like some like copy machine, like people like walking through in the narrator's office building, and there's just a moment where like boom. Like, the red jacket is so clear if you're really looking at it, and he's just sitting there, like, leaning against a copy machine. Maybe because he's starting to disassociate.
Yeah.
Like, it's so awesome.
No, I... Well, hold on.
I was just going to say, as somebody who came in knowing the twist, and I'll be interested to see,
Well, I've talked to Samuel a little bit,
I
want
to know when y'all two realized the twist.
Oh, I realized it extremely early on. Which is why I thought it wasn't the twist. I realized it maybe 30 minutes in.
Yeah.
Really?
As somebody who knew the twist going in, it seemed super obvious to me, but I didn't know whether that was because I knew it or because it was.
No, Samuel and I talked about that a little bit after because I was like, yeah, because it seemed so obvious to me, I was like, yeah, like he's like his alter ego. He has multiple personalities, like whatever. And Tyler is one of his personalities. Like, there you go. And I thought that was just like a thing that was understood because of how obvious it seemed to me. And so I was like, so that's not going to be the twist because I already know it. So then when it was the twist, I was like, I was actually like a little disappointed because I was like, wait, I thought it was going to be like, oh. And like, I was like, man, I was
you're
like,
too smart.
Well, the thing is, and that's what's crazy. Me and Samuel are not the same when we watch movies. Samuel actively would be sitting there trying to figure out the twist.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not a thing that I do. I want to be, like, surprised.
Yeah.
I don't want to figure it out because then it's not satisfying and, like, like, when it happens.
Yeah.
So the fact that just, like, I wasn't trying. Because, like, you know, every time that, like, you would be like, oh, did you see it? Or, like, or y'all would say things. I would specifically tune y'all out because I was like, I don't want to, like, look for something. I want to be surprised. And the fact that I still got it 30 minutes in, I was like, they probably could have been a little more subtle about it if they wanted it to be, like, a really intense twist.
I think they wanted you to be able to find it if you were looking closely enough. Because the whole thing, it's a certain type of irony. I think it's dramatic irony.
Well, yeah, dramatic irony is when the audience knows something the character doesn't know. Yeah.
I think that's kind of like what they were going for with this, was if you really look hard enough in the first, like, hour and a half before the narrator figures it out, you can kind of figure it out. And they're like the little clues to it, and like the little things. Like, and so I think that's kind of what they were trying to do. But I'm interested to hear what John thought. Did you realize before Tyler told him directly that he was an alter ego?
The twist still came as, I don't want to say a shot, but I was like, ooh. Because you start to piece it together as, like, the conversation's unfolding before he says anything.
Yeah.
Because it's a whole spiral of, like, everyone's like, yes, sir, like, sir. People would say, you say that, like, the whole...
So unprofessional.
Cringe.
It's a scam call, of course.
Of course it is. God. When I first saw the flash at the beginning, I was like, okay, something weird is happening. I don't know what it's because... There was that brief flash on the screen where I believe I saw...
There's a single frame where you can see Brad Pitt. He's just standing there.
Well, there's also... There's something that's in the fun facts that I'll read later that flashes at the beginning of the movie. But unless you, like, pause the screen, you can't read the message that's there.
Yeah.
But I'll go into that later.
Yeah. But I think I started to piece it together a little bit. Whenever he was having that the big argument after the chemical burn,
with Marla,
because at that point it was like whenever they were starting to sit there and like finish each other's, like whenever they were like saying this conversation
is over, and close the door is over, and it's like yeah, and like that's the really big first clue is that
the little puppeteer thing. I was like, this is interesting. And then, like, once the hunt for Durden started, I kind of started like, oh. Mm-hmm.
See, I kind of thought, so because, like, they had led me so strongly to believe he was an alter ego, I was like, so the twist is going to be that he's not. Either that he's a real person, or I started to think in the scene where they're, like, fighting and on the camera you can see that it's just, like, the narrator.
Yeah.
When he was getting dragged, for a second I was like, is this about to be a movie about ghosts? Like, I was sitting there like, is Tyler a ghost? Is that the twist? That he's not an alter ego and that he's a ghost? Because, like, when he was getting dragged for a second, like, I was like, I mean, you could do that yourself, but it's hard.
Some of the stuff that they showed is impossible to do by yourself, and I think that's when the whole how much of this actually happened comes in.
Yeah. But that led me to believe, oh, that's going to be the twist, is that they've led me to believe he's in his head, but he's a ghost, and he's possessing him, and that's what I thought.
Nope. It's a good point, because, again, we could see the little glimpse of, like, how whenever Durden pours a chemical burn on our narrator, he's like freaking and spazzing out. But we pan to like where he does it. He's stone cold sober.
Yep, he's just sitting there like his hand already with the burn. It's like the movie tries to avert your expectations in several ways. Because it tries to show you at one point and then it shows you kind of proof that there's no way. At another point, you're but
if you look at the mark on his hand, the angle on his hand, because I think it was his left hand, or maybe
it was his right hand.
So the way that it was angled was like this,
yeah,
to his own mouth,
yeah,
where it was not a like upper lip here, lower lip here, because someone leaned in and kissed it.
Yeah, true.
It was angled towards his face,
yeah.
And so as soon as I saw that, I was like, yeah, I'm right. Like, because yeah. I started thinking he's an alter ego, but then as soon as I saw, like, how the lips were formed on his hand, I was like, oh, yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. It's him. And I wasn't even trying to look for it. I just saw it and was like, that's...
You just noticed it. Yeah,
yeah. Like that's just what it is.
Smart, you're clever. I didn't know it the first time I watched it. I had no idea. Clever girl.
But I have also watched a few movies where, like, at the end, it's like the person was doing it the whole time, or like the person was dead the whole time, or something like that. And so,
you're kind of already clued into that mentality.
Right, okay. Right. Like, I don't look for it in all the movies I go to, but if they drop like one hint of it, I'm already on the scent. I'm like, okay, I get it. Like, yeah, but the narrator moves into Tyler's home, a large dilapidated house in an industrial area. They have further fights outside the bar, which attract growing crowds of men. The fights move to the bar's basement, where the men form the eponymous Fight Club, which routinely meets. Marla overdoses on pills and telephones the narrator for help. He ignores her, but Tyler goes to her apartment to save her. They begin a sexual relationship, much to the narrator's irritation. Tyler warns the narrator never to talk to Marla about him. The narrator blackmails his boss for his company's assets to support Fight Club and quits his job.
That scene.
That was my favorite scene.
That was a great scene.
That's my favorite scene in the whole movie. I loved it so much.
I really liked that scene where he's beating himself up.
The super slow realization of the guy of what he's doing.
Because the boss does not get it. He's like, this guy's just crazy. And then like he starts to get it once he's like crawling across the floor toward him. He's like, oh, God, no.
And he's, like, making demands, like, as he's doing it.
Yeah, and then, like, right before,
the security kicks the door in.
Like, he's just like, you'll never have to see me again, mouth full of blood.
Yeah.
And as soon as he opens the door, he's just like, don't hit me again.
And he's like, so and awesome. Now we had funding. And it's like, whoa. Oh my gosh, no, I liked that scene a lot.
What was to say, we now have corporate sponsorship.
Well, more new members join Fight Club, including Robert Bob Paulson, a man with testicular cancer whom the narrator had previously met at one of his support groups.
Bob had bitch tits.
So, we're going to do the movie Stage Fright at some point. I've told you about it. It's that movie about, like, a theater camp that gets, like, there's, like, a slasher, and there's, like, musical numbers. The slasher, like, uses a knife as a capo, and all his songs are, like, heavy metal. But the only reason I'm bringing that up is because Meatloaf is like a main character in that horrible movie. Yes. And so seeing him in this, like, doing a very good job compared to that being like the only other thing I've seen him in, I was like, how?
Meatloaf really is a confusing man.
He is a very confusing man. I couldn't believe how good of a job he was doing in this movie after I'd seen him in that. And I was just like, this man has the widest range I've ever seen. But yeah, Tyler then recruits their members to a new anti-materialist and anti-corporate organization, Project Mayhem, without the narrator's involvement. The group engages in subversive acts of vandalism, increasingly troubling the narrator. After the narrator complains that Tyler has excluded him, Tyler reveals that he was the one who caused the explosion at the narrator's condo, which of course he did.
Why do you think I blew up your apartment?
Like, absolutely. Well, of course,
and that's
he did.
That's another big clue is the scene when he's on the phone with the policeman, and Tyler's even like, "You did blow up your apartment."
Oh, yeah, he's like, "Tell him the truth. Tell him you blew it all up."
Yeah.
And then he like,
he's like, "Wait, am I a suspect?" And it's like, "Yeah, you are."
Of course you are, because you because
you
it.
Did it.
Yeah. Oh, like he comes through, and he says like the weirdest line. Like he says, "Tell him that the rebel who exploded my domicile is the same person who's relying on my perceptions." And like all this weird, I just love that little like interpersonal monologue he's always having with himself.
Yeah.
It's so strange. Like, it's almost like he's trying to tell jokes. But he's not funny.
No, I am a so big strange. Fan of plays or movies or shows that have like essentially a voice you're talking to in your head be a character on the outside that like you're like I love plays like that where like someone where it's mostly just someone talking to themselves, but they've created like the being they're talking to is like either the person they want to be or someone they hate, or like maybe it's a past relative that they speak to in their head or something like that.
Yeah, like you realize that the whole time the narrator wasn't who you thought it was.
No,
yeah, that, it's so cool.
Well, and that's another reason why I knew for certain like about 30 minutes in, oh, they're one person, is because they never named the narrator.
Was it a specific, like, moment that clued you in, or you just kind of knew? You just saw enough clues, you're like, oh, okay, I think that they're the same person.
You know what I think it was? It was the moment where Brad Pitt's in the bathtub.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the moment for me.
And he starts telling him, and he's like, that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
That was the moment when I went, yeah, they're the same person. And then from then on, it just kept giving me more. And I was like, yeah, of course it's the same person. Yeah. Like, 100%. It's awesome. That was the moment when I was like, for sure. Like, for sure they're the same person. I don't know, man. I'm a big fan of that type of stuff. And I just forgot that Brad Pitt was, like, so good.
Yeah.
I really forgot.
He's good. He's amazing.
Like, I guess with some, like, really big name actors, I'm like, yeah, you know, they're good.
Yeah.
But, like, I never realized just how good they are until I see them in something like this. And yep. I was like, oh, wow, Brad Pitt's, like, actually really good.
Yeah, like, in the scene when the owner of the bar, like, comes in.
I was just going to say that scene.
Yeah, that scene is unbelievable.
Where he basically is the Joker.
See you next week. When he's just like, please let us keep it loose. He's just laughing. He's like, oh, man, you're getting out some aggression. Like, oh, my gosh.
Like, he was just cheering him on. Like, come on, get it all out. Let's go.
Come on. You're going to stop eventually. You have to. You're not going to keep going.
Yeah.
Oh, it's awful. Jeez,
no.
Man.
No, but that scene with, like, his Joker laugh, I was like, wow.
Yeah,
this guy's got some sauce.
You don't know where I've been, Lou. Spitting blood in his face.
Ugh. Oh, my gosh. No, that was the grossest thing ever, was when he did it to his boss, was it? That he shook blood on someone's face?
And that was Lou.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I couldn't remember which characters that was, but I just remember going, oh, God. Yeah. Like, so gross.
Yeah. Pretty nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah. For a second, I thought this movie was going to suddenly be about AIDS. And I was like, wait, whoa.
You can't touch on that many topics.
Yeah. Because before I realized that they were one person, I thought this was about to be like a movie about like these really toxic for each other, like, gay lovers coming together and starting a fighting ring. Because it seemed like they were kind of in, like, falling in love a little bit. And, like, it was almost like they were,
dare I say they were.
Well, yeah. And so I was like, oh, this is interesting. Like, okay. And then I realized they were the same person. And I was like, okay, so it's not that. But, you know. But because of that thought, when he did that, I was like, wait.
What's happening?
Hold on a second. But Tyler disappears one night, and when Paulson is killed by the police fleeing from a sabotage operation, the narrator tries to halt the project. He follows a paper trail to cities Tyler had visited, discovering Project Mayhem has spread throughout the country. In one city, a project member addresses the narrator as Mr. Durden. Confused, the narrator calls Marla and discovers that she also believes he is Tyler. Tyler appears in his hotel room with a different haircut and clothing and reveals that they are dissociated personalities. The narrator assumed the personality of Tyler when he believed he was sleeping. So essentially, he just doesn't sleep.
Yep.
When he sleeps, he's Tyler.
Yeah, when he sleeps, he's Tyler. And when he's awake, he's whoever the narrator's real name is, which I think probably is Tyler Durden.
Yeah, I mean, I have to assume that's actually his name.
Yeah, like, I can't imagine. It's like a random secondary
they
name.
They just picked another name.
That's so interesting, too, because the fact that when he goes to all these anonymous meetings, he uses a fake name every time, thus hinting to the disassociation.
Cornelius.
Yeah.
Cornelius Rupert.
Go on, Cornelius, you can cry.
It's like a whole... I'm trying to think of what I'm like.
I know. This movie, like kind of makes you tongue-tied. It's hard to talk about it because there's so much going on.
Because you're not supposed to talk about it. That's why.
We're breaking the first two rules of Fight Club.
Is don't talk about it.
No, we have to stop. And the podcast. We're done. We got to unplug our mics.
Brad Pitt shows up in the window.
He's just like, first
rule. Brad Pitt.
The piece of paper's on the window. Is that Brad Pitt?
He's like, come on the podcast, guy. But the narrator blacks out. When he returns to the house, he uncovers Tyler's plans to erase debt by destroying buildings that contain credit card records. He apologizes to Marla and warns her that she is in danger, but she is tired of his contradictory behavior and refuses to listen. makes sense.
Yes. Definitely.
He tries to warn the police, but the officers are members of the project. He attempts to disarm the explosives in one building, but Tyler subdues him. When Tyler, holding him at gunpoint on the top floor... Yeah, that whole he subdues him thing.
That scene is so freaking funny and crazy and weird. All of the stuff, as soon as the narrator goes off the rails and starts running through the city in his underpants, the line that he says after he gets the gun and is, like, holding the officers at gunpoint is the funniest line in the movie. He says, "The next person who moves is gonna get a lead salad."
Yeah. Said that, and I was like, you just say that like it's a normal thing, like it's a normal thing to say.
Like, that line always makes me laugh.
He reminded me of that scene, of that meme of, like, Daniel Radcliffe in a robe with just, like, guns in the middle of the street.
Yes, yes,
like,
exactly.
When he's running around in a robe and underwear with a gun through the street, that's all I thought of was that.
Oh, it's crazy.
No, it's so bonkers because it really does, like, make you think, like, you know, what are all the people around him, like, actually, and what is just his, like, projection?
Yeah.
Because, like, did Marla actually, like, overdose and ask him to come over, or was that his, like, his excuse, you know, that
it's
he
hard
made
to
up?
Say, or she did seems she even like ask such a different him, character?
Oh, yeah. The whole second half of the movie, she is
a completely different character. And it's hard to, like, grasp what really is. It's so strange.
Yeah. No, something I didn't write down that I just thought was really cool is that apparently Helena Bonham Carter insisted that her makeup artist apply all of her makeup with her left hand because she was like, I don't think Marla would know how to actually apply makeup well. So, like, apply it with your left hand so it kind of looks like shit. Yeah. Like, which
That's
I thought
awesome.
Was really cool.
That's awesome.
Which she did a fantastic job of being two totally different people.
Yeah.
And it was so subtle, too. It wasn't like she was, you know, it wasn't like some crazy difference. It was just... It was suddenly obvious that you were like, okay, something's different. She's not the person she's been this entire movie.
Yeah, it's so strange.
Yeah, it's very weird. But yeah, so when Tyler, holding him at gunpoint on the top floor, the narrator realizes that as he and Tyler are the same person, the narrator is holding the gun. He fires it into his own mouth, shooting through his cheek, which that was the craziest thing ever. I was like, how? Like, I was watching and I was like, oh, he's dead, and that's the end of the movie. And then he just gets up and starts talking to people, and I was like, okay, hold on.
The guys say it, well, because that's the thing, is because all of the fighting that the narrator did and that Tyler Durden did was the same person fighting the whole time.
Yeah.
So by this point, like, he is a bad mofo. I mean, he's been taking punches.
If the Fight Club is real.
I'm assuming it's real. I have to go off the assumption that it's real.
The guy in the review thinks that basically nothing is real.
I tend to agree with that, I think.
There's no way.
The guy in the review, when I read it, basically thinks Fight Club isn't real, the ending isn't real. Like, honestly, this guy is probably just living in that dilapidated house. He never lived in a condo. He never had all that furniture. He's just imagining this life that could be. And, like, creating a personality, but, like, none of it's actually real. That's basically what the guy thinks.
I mean, that's the thing, is there's enough evidence on both sides to support either argument. Because every time that the narrator gets a call from the police officer, he's always in a different place. Like, at one point, one of the calls that he gets from the police officer about his exploited apartment is in, like, some random, like, hotel room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, how did you get this number? Yeah. Like, how does he have this number? And that was
exactly
the first,
like,
big
another
clue.
Another reason that
yeah.
may not have happened. Yeah. Like, you
that
know.
Was the first big clue to me, like, the first time that I watched it, that, like, a thing that my brain kind of just, like, skipped over, and I was like, wait, is when he gets the call from the police officer,
mm-hmm.
he calls the house on Paper Street. And it's like, how does he have that number? Like, there's no way.
Also, it doesn't make any sense that no one answers the phone with the number of the address you just called. Like, people were answering the phone saying, like, 1888 or like, 2106. And it's like, that's not at all how you answer a phone. You always say that, like, the name of the company you're working for or, like, hello or something like that. So that was also the first clue that I was like, I don't think any of that's real. I think it's all just him making stuff up in his head.
You just can't go that meta with it, because then you reach your point where like you might as well not argue about the movie.
Oh,
because
see, it's I not mean, real. Like, I mean, that's what thing. I did with Total Recall. I was like, I think all of it's fake.
I disagreed with you on that one.
No.
I disagreed with you on Total
Recall. I know
why
you disagree, but I stand by it. I think all of it was in his head. But I love things that like you don't know.
Yeah.
And they don't tell you. Yeah. And it's just like, it could all be real. It could also all be a figment of his imagination, and he's just sitting in this house, like, rocking back and forth. Like,
insanity.
There's no clue. But yeah, so Tyler dies, and the narrator ceases mentally projecting him. Project Mayhem members bring a kidnapped Marla to the building. The narrator and Marla reconcile, and holding hands, the two watch as the explosives detonate, collapsing buildings all around them.
You met me at a very strange time in my life.
What was the... Do you know... what the thing was with Tyler when he died saying, "What's that smell?" I didn't look that up, but I'm curious.
You know,
if it's toast,
then he's having a stroke.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
is that a thing that when you have a stroke, you smell toast?
Yeah, you smell like burning toast.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
I think I was like, wait, I smell toast right now.
I smell toast right now. but that was Fight Club, guys.
That movie's is insane. Like, there's so much, like, to talk about, but, like, it's all just kind of, like, along, like, the same themes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's so much that I want to say, but I recognize that at a certain point, it would just get redundant. Like, for me, it just keeps talking over and over about certain things that happen. Because I just love this movie so much, I just want to, like, you know... just like love all over it and just be like, okay, well, this is this thing I like. And then, oh, and then this happens. And then this part's hilarious. Don't you love this line? Like, oh, I love it. It's so funny. You know, it's just, you know, I can't geek out too hard.
Well, I'd love to hear you geek out. If you can come up with a better name for this movie than Fight Club.
Oh boy. I might just call it Paper Street.
I have one.
Okay. What is it?
Or like Paper Street, like Soap Company or something like that.
Okay.
Project Mayhem.
I hate you.
I was
the Paper Street Hooligans.
Oh my! That's actually what I was thinking. As I was like, you know, Russell has very similar tastes in his movies. Yeah, like they all have kind of a running theme.
I like dark movies.
Fist fighting.
A lot of fist fighting.
My rename would probably just be Just Let Go.
Yeah.
Because That was the thing that stuck out to me from the very beginning scene. Was when he buries his face like in Bob's bitch tits, and he goes, I just let go, and like, you know, I feel like,
and then something happened,
I just let go. Yeah, and so that's probably what I would call it. John is thinking very hard.
I am.
yeah, but that idea of just letting go is one of the biggest themes like throughout the whole movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because those words are used like three different times.
Yeah.
When he's crying between Bob's bitch tits, when he purposefully gets in the wreck in the limo, when he has like the five guys in the back, when they're like, they're swerving off the highway,
oh,
like, while
yeah,
it's raining.
Oh, yeah, when he has
he's
the Project
like,
Mayhem guys in the back.
Yeah, he's just like, just let go.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the very end, I think before he shoots himself, like there's like another like small like reference to it.
I was surprised that, I mean, I was genuinely surprised that, I guess surprised and not surprised, that Tyler didn't make more of an effort to stop him. Like, when he, like, put the gun in his mouth, Tyler just kind of looked at him.
Yeah.
And I guess it doesn't totally surprise me because Tyler, the Tyler personality, I'm sure, was like, you don't have the balls to do it.
Yeah.
At the same time, like, you know, I also feel like there is... definitely within Tyler the fight response.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, you know what's gonna happen if he fires that gun. I was shocked it didn't turn into like a bigger like him fighting himself thing again.
Yeah.
But I guess that's just a representation of like the narrator finally taking control.
Seizing control.
Yeah. And like pushing Tyler down and not letting him fight him.
Yeah.
Cult of personality.
Nice.
Okay. I like that.
Nice.
Cult of personalities. If we just want to spoil the movie.
Again.
Yeah, spoil it again. Well, I went on Amazon. The general consensus is pretty good. 85% rated at 5 stars.
Nice.
Which is, I think, 3 points lower than Empire. I've got both positive and negative. Whichever y'all want to hear first.
I feel like... Is the positive one the one where nothing was real? Or is that just like an additional one you're just going to throw into to the positive and negative?
So I have one negative. I have two positives. One of the positives is that one I've been talking about. And then there's another positive.
Let's hear the negative first then.
Okay. So this is by a user that has a weirdly spelled username. I'm just going to call it Orworm. And it's titled Fashionable Fluff of Nothing. And this was in 2019. I love Brad Pitt, who doesn't, and have positive emotions toward Ed Norton, but this film is not my cup of tea. It simply does not work. A lot of sound and fury for what? There is sub-zero sympathy or even interest for Ed Norton's character from the get-go. He is an insomniac, mentally disconnected from the world because of his sleep deprivation, but he is also very judgmental, even perverted in dealing with others. This setup derails the entire movie. I never felt any interest for Ed Norton's character. If he would have disappeared 15 minutes in, also fine with me. The same goes for Brad Pitt's character, a reckless and cool seducer who sucks Ed Norton into an alternate world of defiance and violence. Cap it off with Helena Bonham Carter, a narcissistic sadist bathing in the misery of others, and you have a bumbling plotline full of repetitions where nobody ever cares what happens. I understand that the 1999 film, which feels pretty dated today, has a cult following, so there might be something in it, but whatever it is, I could not find it. 1 star.
I don't know. I feel like I might be wrong. I might just be biased, but I feel like the characters are like have a lot of stake and emotional things to like.
Two characters do.
Yeah, I mean the narrator and
the narrator and Lara.
Because Tyler is supposed to be because he's made up. Like that's the thing.
He's not supposed to have multiple dimensions. He's
not going
to
be dynamic. He's one thing.
Yeah. So I have the positive that I've been referencing, and then I have a different positive. I don't have to read both. Just whichever one y'all want to hear.
I mean, I definitely want to hear the one you've been referencing since you've said it so much.
Okay. So this is from William David Shalonis, and this was last year, and it's titled, You Have to Watch It Twice or More to Appreciate It Fully. It's interesting. If you don't have it, schizophrenia makes this a very different world. You need to stop reading this if you don't want spoilers, because I'm not going to pause or put space lines down there for you to follow if you want to read on. Fight Club? Well, it never existed. If you really think about it, it never happened at all. It was all his own living nightmare of reality. Same with his good guy persona that came in and, crazily enough, as I just realized last night in watching this again, his girlfriend in the end scene. None of that ever existed or ever happened. Just makes this movie so much more awesome once you realize that. You have to take a step back to the very beginning where he's talking about redecorating his apartment with stuff from IKEA. No, I think that never happened. Sure, he might have picked up a magazine about it, but no way he bought all that stuff, right? I mean, this guy went into squalor, into a dump of a homeless house at one point. That part you can believe, but that he had all this custom-made stuff before, it doesn't add up, so it can't be true. It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and despite the spoilers, because the movie does them the whole time with subliminal blinks here and there that you get it, anyhow, this movie is amazing. 5 stars.
You know, that almost makes a lot of sense with Marla, too, because that would be why she's so different at the end, because the narrator is creating a person who can relate to him and who he can protect.
I tend to think that the reason why she's so different is because he's finally, like, viewing her through a sane lens.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't necessarily disagree. Like, if the director came out and said that was the case, then I'd be like, that tracks.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, but I don't know that I agree.
Well, he could have been making the character of Marla match whichever persona is, I guess, the most in power.
Yeah.
So for the whole first half of the movie, the Tyler persona is leading the way and is, like, causing all of this to happen and doing everything. And so the Marla persona would have to be someone who can relate a little more and make a little more sense with that destructive Tyler persona.
Yeah.
And then when the narrator starts coming in and, like, taking the lead and everything, Marla becomes, like, a normal person.
Yeah.
And so, Marla could be made up and he could just be making her whatever fits his persona at the time. Or she could be real. But, I like the idea that we have no clue how much of this movie is real and how much it isn't. Again, leading back to how similar it is to American Psycho.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really cool one.
That's very cool.
So what do you guys think this is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes out of 100?
I mean, this is such a popular movie.
Yeah. I mean, this one's got to be high.
I feel like it's got to be, 89%.
Okay.
I was going to go a little higher. I was going to go, 91.
Okay.
I'm going to sit at a 92.
Samuel, you're the closest, but you're still not very close. It is 79% critically. Really? Yeah.
I didn't expect that. Yeah. I mean, it is a weird movie. It's weird, and there's some offensive stuff in there.
So here's the thing. I guess it's time for this.
Here we go. I'm ready.
Oh, boy.
I agree with that.
Really?
I didn't love it. It was okay. It was overlong.
I didn't think Samuel would love it because it was similar to like slice of life stuff.
It was overlong. It was almost not too convoluted, but like they really didn't explain anything. And I get that it wasn't about that. I get that it was about the psychology of it and the whole. They were trying to make the statement about consumerism and all, but even that it didn't really drive home. It kind of dropped that a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, about two-thirds of the way through the film, it dropped the whole consumerism thing, and they didn't even really talk about it. Even at the end, when they're blowing up, the towers and all, and you're seeing all them fall and all this, you're not really even thinking at all about, oh, this is the statement he's trying to make. Yeah. You're still trying to figure out what's going on, what's real and what's not, and all that.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's almost mixed messaging in a way that just didn't really do it for me.
Yeah. No, that's the thing, is I completely agree. it's so confusing. Like, that's why it's kind of hard to talk about the movie, like, in general, like, to really say what the movie's about, because it's so confusing.
Well, yeah. And I know I've mentioned this before with other movies that, have sort of come out and have been, like, this very, like, confusing, doesn't really have one answer.
Yeah.
I really, really like that. Yeah. There are some movies where I want to know the answer, like, more, linear, plot-driven, what I would call, normal movies.
Yeah,
And then movies like this, I don't really want an answer. I like that it's more fluid, and maybe that relates to, my love for, poetry and stuff, where, there can be a million meanings in it. Unless you have seen, the author said this, and it's like, oh, okay, then that's what it means. Yeah, but if the author's, hundreds of years, dead, and no one has any idea what they wrote it about, you can interpret whatever you want out of it and be like, okay, I think it's about this, and someone else could get a totally different meaning. And I think that's so awesome just with art in general, when you have something that can be interpreted so many ways. So that didn't bother me at all. I didn't mind that there wasn't anything explained. I thought that was kind of the point, was that there wasn't supposed to be an explanation.
Yeah, was that you're kind of like, if you're, like I said earlier, if you're looking for a message in this movie, among its three or four main themes, you're going to find it, and you can take away that message from the movie and be totally happy.
I mean, the biggest one for me wasn't even so much the anti-consumerism stuff. For me, the one that followed it all the way through is at what point do you give something meaning, and at what point is it just a thought in your head?
Yeah.
But that was really cool, especially the ending shot. I was like, if this is all in his head, then this is probably a big moment of he's just killed this altar and he's, sort of freeing himself up to be a person.
Yeah.
And if it's real, oh boy.
Wow.
Wow. That could still be the case, but if it's real, there's a whole lot of other consequences coming.
Yeah.
But we have no idea. Anyway, audience score out of 100.
For Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah.
I think the audience score is definitely going to be a little higher than the critical one. So with that touchstone of knowing that it was 79, you said it was?
It was 79 critically.
Yeah. With that touchstone, I'm going to go a little higher. I'm going to say 84.
Okay.
Again, stealing my number. 85.
Okay.
This seems like the kind of movie that critics would like more to me.
Really?
Yeah.
I think the opposite.
I'm going to say 73.
John is closest because it's 96. Wow. Audience-wise.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like a polarizing difference.
Yeah. It's 79 to 96.
Mm-hmm. That's a 19-point difference. Holy crap.
And the IMDb score out of 10.
7.8.
Okay.
I'm going to say 8.0 even.
Okay.
I'm going to say 8.4.
It's John again because it's an 8.8 on IMDb.
It's all so confusing.
Well, it matches with the movie.
Yeah,
that doesn't make any sense. Well, this movie had a budget of $63 million, and it made $101.2 million. So nice. It definitely made money.
Good for them.
Wait, how much money did it make?
101.2.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you said 1.2 for a second, and I was like...
No.
1.2 million?
Holy that crap. Would be terrible.
That's a terrible loss.
So I got a bunch of different fun facts here. So author Chuck Palahniuk first came up with the idea for the novel after being beaten up on a camping trip when he complained to some nearby campers about the noise of their radio. When he returned to work, he was fascinated to find that nobody would mention or acknowledge his injuries, instead saying such commonplace things as, "How was your weekend?" Palahniuk concluded that the reason people reacted this way was because if they asked him what had happened, a degree of personal interaction would be necessary, and his workmates simply didn't care enough to connect with him on a personal level. It was his fascination with this societal blocking which became the foundation for the novel. So huh. I thought that was cool.
That's really interesting. That's so specific.
Yeah. That he was like, interesting. Let me write a whole book about this. Which he is actually on record as saying that he thinks the movie improved upon his book.
Yeah.
That it's definitely better than the book
he wrote. I did read the book. I got like halfway through it. Not that it wasn't good. Like I couldn't like keep reading, but I was actually working at Books and Money at the time. So I actually had to return it because it was kind of like hard to unpack, like to read it because I was so familiar with the movie and the book was so different that I was like, it's a little tough for me to like relate to it because I'm just so familiar with the movie. But the book was very interesting.
Yeah, he said that he definitely thinks the movie improved upon what he created.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that flashes at the beginning. After the copyright warning, there is another warning on the DVD.
Yes.
This warning is from Tyler Durden, and it is only there for a second. And this is what it says. If you're reading this, then this warning is for you. Every word you read of this is useless fine print and another second off your life. Don't you have other things to do? Is your life so empty that you honestly can't think of a better way to spend these moments? Or are you so impressed with authority that you give respect and credence to all who claim it? Do you read everything you're supposed to read? Do you think everything you're supposed to think? Buy what you're told you should want? Get out of your apartment, meet a member of the opposite sex, stop the excessive shopping and masturbation, quit your job, start a fight, prove you're alive. If you don't claim your humanity, you will become a statistic. You have been warned, Tyler.
That was what I was really, really excited for you guys to see, but they took it out of the Blu-ray 10th anniversary edition and did the little title screen fake out instead.
Yeah.
Where it showed like a different
movie. Where it showed a different movie.
Never Been Kissed or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like it changes that and then like the music like adjusts and stuff. Like, yeah. So they took out that thing and did this little like twist with the title menu instead. But I forgot that it wasn't in there because when I watched it for the first time, I saw that because it was on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And like it was a part of the movie.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and it's only
what?
There for a second. I was so like what the heck? So like you'd have to like pause it to
read
it.
Yeah, I started reading it and I was like, this is not what is happening?
Well, Brad Pitt says he did not want his parents to see the movie, but he couldn't convince them not to watch it. They changed their minds after watching the chemical burn scene. Mm-hmm. And then they were like, yeah, we're not going to keep watching.
Yeah. It's pretty intense.
Brad Pitt and Helena Bonham Carter spent 3 days recording orgasmic sounds for their unseen sex scenes.
So awesome.
Throughout the film, Tyler Durden can be seen wearing blue blockers, a type of sunglasses commonly used by insomniacs to filter out blue light, which is detrimental to the production of melatonin, a chemical essential for sleep.
That is awesome.
Which I thought was really cool.
That's really cool.
In an infamous incident, the Friday that the film was released theatrically in the U.S., Rosie O'Donnell appeared on her TV show and revealed that she had seen the film earlier in the week and had been unable to sleep ever since. She then proceeded to give away the plot twist ending of the film and urged all of her viewers to avoid the movie at all costs. Edward Norton, Brad Pitt, and David Fincher discussed this incident on their DVD commentary track, with Pitt calling O'Donnell's actions unforgivable.
That's so terrible. Why would you do that?
I don't know, man. Rosie O'Donnell is an experience.
That's messed up, man. I hate that she lost them a lot of money, and not just probably. That, but like a lot of like viewership of people who like might really enjoy it.
Yeah,
man, I hate that. That's messed up.
Well, at around 10 minutes in, the visible breath in the cave scene is actually recycled Leonardo DiCaprio breath from Titanic, which was composited into the shot.
Why would you? I don't understand.
I don't either, but I thought it was very
Hollywood
weird
reusing
and
actors'
random.
Breath.
Brad and Leo are friends, so maybe that's why.
Maybe I
that's
don't know.
That's incredible.
But I thought that was so random that I was like, I guess I okay. That's hilarious. At around an hour and 15, when a Fight Club member sprays the priest with a hose, the camera briefly shakes. This happens because the cameraman couldn't keep himself from laughing.
Yeah.
Because he was just like, you sprayed a priest with a hose. And then the priest turned around and, like, tried to, like, apologize about it.
That's hilarious.
Tyler Durden was originally going to recite a workable recipe for homemade explosives, as he does in the novel, but in the interest of public safety, the filmmakers decided to substitute fictional recipes for the real ones in the movie.
Smart.
That's probably for the best.
Yeah, definitely for the best. There were a couple of things, so I didn't actually, like, put them in the fun facts, but they were interesting. There were a couple of things that the, like, head of 20th Century Fox had, like, a big problem with. One of the things was she was horrified by the scene where, the narrator is listening to them, like, have sex through the door. And then when they open the door, he's wearing a glove. She was, like, horrified by that. And she, like she was not okay with it. And she wanted them to take it out. But then when they, like, released it and they showed, like, screenings and everyone thought it was, like, really fucking funny and, like, were freaking out, she changed her mind and was like, okay, maybe that was the right call.
Well, because it is funny. Because it's just so random.
It's so absurd. Like it's just so crazy.
Why does he have a glove on? Like, just one glove. It's his right hand. He's not wearing two gloves. He's wearing one.
No, there was another thing that kind of ended up biting her in the ass. So this was another thing I didn't write down, but I just remember it. So the original line, the line where she says, there's this really upsetting line, sorry for those who are listening, there's a very upsetting line that Helena Bonham Carter says that is, I haven't been fucked like that since grade school.
Yeah.
And originally, the line was, they flop back on the bed and she says, I want to have your abortion. And the head of 20th Century Fox was like, no, you have to take the line out. You know, that's screwed up. Change the line. So they changed it to the line that's now in the movie. Ziskin, the head of the place, was like, that's worse. No, change it back. And Fincher said, no, you told me to change it. This is the new line. And kept it in. And she was upset about it forever.
I want to have your abortion.
That's
holy
what the line
crap
was originally.
That's intense.
Yeah. So essentially, they were both terrible lines, and he just gave her another arguably worse line. And she was like, no, go back. And he was like, no, the deal was, I write a different line. This is the new line.
That says grade school.
That line is so terrible. Every single one of us in the room, like, cringed. We were like, God, like, that's horrible.
The implications of that.
It's a terrible line. God. It's awful. Sorry that you all had to hear it.
Well, if you watched the movie.
Yeah, if you watched the movie, you already knew what to expect. But
and remember, if you're listening and you haven't watched the movie, what are you doing?
Yeah, like, you, like, you just ruined the experience.
You really should watch the movie.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Gave them the warning at the beginning. If they chose not to follow it, then that's their loss.
Watch the movie.
Any complaints from here on forward are invalid.
Exactly. The last one I have here is, to ensure that Bob's breasts and love handles hung correctly, his fat suit was filled with bird seed so that it would spill over his pants and give the impression of sagging flesh. Altogether, the suit plus the seed weighed over 100 pounds.
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah. Because fat suits are already so heavy.
Yeah, they're heavy, but
and
but
they
with
added
bird seed,
seed
on top
like
of that.
Bird seed to it to make it even heavier.
I actually have one more little fun fact that I just thought was super amusing. In one of the really early on scenes, right after Tyler go out to the bar together, and then they have like their first like little mini fight. There's a shot later on where they're shooting golf in his front yard.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I know what you're gonna say.
Yeah.
But say it.
There is a in that scene, both Edward Norton and Brad Pitt actually went on like a crazy bender and got drunk as shit.
Yeah.
And then were in his front yard and they were hitting golf balls at the catering van.
Yes, they were.
And they broke like two windows and dented like a whole bunch of the catering van. So like there was a whole bunch of like expenses that had to be paid out like to the catering company. But I just thought that was funny.
Yeah, and they were actually blasted like just doing that.
They were so drunk.
I saw that fun fact, but I didn't write it down, so I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
So, time to recast.
Well, before we do, I want to say something, too, about this movie.
Okay.
This movie made Ed Norton a bit of a, I don't know, he was probably already a little bit of a pain to work with before this movie, but ever since this movie has come out, he's gotten like a horrible reputation in Hollywood for being just absolutely the worst to work with.
Yikes.
That's why he was supposed to be the Incredible Hulk in the MCU. He signed a contract, a multi-film contract and all that. And then after filming the first Incredible Hulk movie, Marvel said, we cannot work with this guy anymore, and fired him.
Wow. I mean, I love, it's Mark Ruffalo who plays, I love him as the Hulk. So.
The 2008 version of the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, the 2008, which is canon in the MCU.
It is.
But, this movie kind of ruined people working with Ed Norton forever.
I mean, that's the thing, though, is that he is really, really good.
But, like, I am a firm believer that, you know, your amount of talent does not allow you to be more of a jerk.
Even if you're
incredibly talented, you should still treat all the people around you like people and be kind to your workers.
Be rude just because you're talented.
Right. Like just because you're a big, you know, like you're the star doesn't mean that you get to go around like treating people like trash, you know?
Yeah. Have you guys seen Primal Fear?
Mm.
Oh my gosh.
Are you going to have to put that one in the hat?
Yes.
Well, make a note on your phone so that when we refill the hat, you can put it in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, did you find out, what awards this movie won?
Yes, I did. So, this movie did not win any awards, but it was nominated for Best Editing and Best... It was the Best Visual Effects and Best Sound Editing. It was nominated at the Academy Awards.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, the effects were really cool. I did not really, like, necessarily... I guess I do understand it. But at the moment, I was kind of like, hold on. When there was, like, the film shaking in front of, like, Tyler's face. And I was like,
the film,
what's happening?
Like, is skipping and stuff. It's
right.
Strange.
For a second, I was like, what's happening? And I guess it's a representation of, like, you know, him, like, slipping.
Yeah.
You know?
Dissociating,
fully dissociating.
Fully dissociating.
I thought that it was that, but also that it might have been a representation of he might have been, like, putting that in the reels.
Yeah.
In the reels.
In the movie theater.
I see.
The projector reels.
Yeah, because Tyler Durden, like, works in the movie theaters.
Right.
And he splices in a single, like, moment of a porn.
Right, yeah. So that would make sense, yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah.
That was my initial thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, who would we recast each other in this movie? I was thinking about this while we were watching it.
Yeah.
And I put Russell as the narrator.
Okay.
But I was bouncing between Russell and Samuel for the narrator.
Yeah.
Like, the whole time I kept bouncing
between. Here's what I'm going to say. I think me and Russell are the two versions of Tyler Durden.
But I'm not sure who is who.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really not sure who is who because that's what I was going. I was like, y'all are those two, but I can't sort.
I think
you.
I have the ability to play a little more of a jerk than you do.
Yeah.
So I might would be the Brad Pitt versus the Ed Norton version. But
I think it could be either one.
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Which is kind of perfect.
Yeah.
If it's hard to sort.
But that's kind of how it should be.
Yeah, it's how it should be. But I agree. I think out of the two of you, I think Samuel would probably be like the Tyler, and you would be the narrator.
Mm.
That's probably how I would see it.
Hear me out.
Oh God.
I think John
is
Marla.
I was going to say that John was Bob.
I was going to say John was the boss.
Okay, John plays Marla, Bob, and the boss.
If we're not taking into account, which we normally don't, any sort of, you know,
yeah.
He's not a girl, any of that. I think John could play the Marla character very, very well. The whole not being able to... The whole just reactionary, like, I don't know who you are, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I think John could play that very well.
And what about beginning Marla? Because you're focusing on end Marla.
Because beginning Marla would be a little bit harder.
Beginning Marla and end Marla are two very different characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
But at least end Marla, John could kill. But also the boss.
See, that's what I thought, is I was like, John is the boss to me. Like, absolutely the guy that, like, constantly comes in and just, like, is always getting on to the narrator about, like, you suck and, like, everything's bad.
Is John always talking down to me? Like always.
What?
No, I want to see John with those big, beautiful bitch tits.
John is also Lou, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the perfect, that's like, the perfect answer, is that John is Lou.
That's the best.
It comes in and just, like, beats the crap out of Samuel.
Bam!
Danielle would also kill Marla.
Yeah. So. I was going to say that Danielle's got to be Marla. I mean,
I am not mad about that. Marla's a fascinating character to play.
She's an awesome
and
character.
Helena Bonham Carter absolutely just killed it.
She's awesome.
Well, in
she's
that case, so I have talented. To be Brad Pitt.
Oh, gosh.
In that case, you have to be Brad Pitt. Oh, gosh.
And I'm just arguing with Danielle, like, on the sidelines. Meanwhile, like...
That fits too well.
Gag me with a spoon, Mrs. Henderson.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wonderful.
That is my wife.
Well, Samuel, we know what your favorite moment of the movie was, because you said it earlier. It was that scene between the narrator and the boss.
Yes.
When he beats the crap out of himself in his office and destroys his entire office building.
My least favorite part would be the acid burn. I just don't.
Yeah,
I hate
that
stuff
got
like
me.
That
yeah.
so bad. So when I was 7, I was wearing a flannel shirt and a pot of boiling water was spilled on my arm.
Yeah,
and I got like a really really bad burn. It was the most painful kind of burn because it was almost a third degree burn, but it wasn't.
Yeah, so it persists all
exactly because
week.
A third degree burn kills off the nerves and then you don't feel it anymore.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
So it was like almost but not quite.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so painful and I had a really big scar for a long time and all, and that feeling of like the hot water being because it was a flannel shirt, it got trapped against my skin.
Yeah,
and like trying to it. I don't deal well with, like, the burns that, like, persist like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my least favorite was the scene where the narrator is just pounding that guy's head in on the floor.
Yes.
Because I have such
That's
a problem
rough.
Watching that specific form of violence.
Yeah, watching that just...
For some reason, like, if it is...
Like head trauma?
Head trauma is really hard for me to watch. Like, people, like, smacking their heads against something and, like, suddenly, like, their skulls cracked open. Like, Walking Dead isn't so bad because they're, like, dead. And so, like, when they, like, you know, stab them through the head, it's not, like,
it's a different, like, association.
It's very different because it's, like, oh, that's a zombie, whatever.
Yeah, easier to digest.
Right. Or even if it's, like, something like I've seen in movies where someone will be talking and suddenly something is, like, stabbed through them. Stabbing a head isn't so bad to me, but, like, bludgeoning a head. Bludgeoning a head or, like, what happens in Game of Thrones. I'm sorry. Fast forward 30 seconds if you don't want Game of Thrones spoilers.
Russell?
Should I close my ears then?
Oh, Russell has seen it?
I can close my ears.
Never mind then. I just won't say it. But
no,
there,
I mean,
but there,
say it.
But
fine.
There's a thing. I won't say the characters. Okay. But there is a thing in Game of Thrones where one character gets their head grabbed and crushed in, and you watch it happen.
Mm.
And that I couldn't watch it. I looked away. And that in that scene, I looked away too, because like watching blunt force trauma or bludgeoning trauma to a head really freaks me out, and so I just have to look away. So that was my least favorite. My favorite, I don't want to say the same as Samuel, so let me pick a different thing.
That is a really good scene. That's one of the best scenes in the movie, for sure.
My favorite would probably be... this is so stupid.
Yeah.
But this is by... I just thought it was so dumb and funny. And it like... I didn't laugh out loud, but, like, I broke out into a big smile when it happened. It was right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
They're like, go into your cave, you'll find your power animal. And it's a penguin. This penguin walks up and goes, slide! And this slides away. And I was like, that just killed me. I thought it was so funny. That was probably just my favorite because it was so weird. And I just, like, there were so many other moments that I loved. That were more like, you know, artsy and stuff. But as far as just like moments that I would pick out as like, it was just so.
It just brought you joy.
It just brought me joy was that one.
That's awesome.
Yeah. John?
I'm going to go last, John. So you go.
Oh, okay. Favorite moment. I have to give it to Chloe.
Chloe?
Oh,
as
Chloe.
She, as she's giving her dialogue and she's like, you know, I'm really trying to get laid. And there's. Her solution is not like creating like any convincing argument. It's just getting closer to the mic.
She just like starts like swallowing the mic. She's like, and I have anal nitrate.
Like, she's so like loud. Naming off all the things she has.
And then she like the poor counselor director has to like pull it back, and then we just cut right back to the snow scene. But instead of the penguin, we get Helen Bonham Carter.
Just like, slide.
Slide. She's smoking a cigarette.
Oh, it was so which, cool.
Actually, now thinking about it, could play in more to the fact that it was another potential personality.
Right.
That was just given
that form. Marla yeah. could be another one of his personalities that was like very just sort of like self-loathing at the beginning, but then it was like, you know, the personality of like he wants to be on the outside of this and she's on the outside of this and he's like desperate to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like that moment too.
She's getting closer to the microphone as a solution to please have sex with me. I'm dying.
I'm going to clip that.
Please have sex with me. I'm dying.
I'm keeping that forever.
Holy crap, that's incredible.
I wish I have a soundboard of just clips from me in this podcast.
Oh gosh.
And then your least favorite.
Yeah.
Least favorite. This one I didn't give because I did overall like the movie. It was very hard to like find like a truly like bad spot, if that makes sense. Like narratively speaking.
Yeah.
A lot of it made sense. to me at least.
Yeah, yeah.
In my interpretation of the movie, it made sense to me.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the one that held the least narrative promise for me was the in-depth look at his job scene where they're investigating the burnt crash car.
Oh yeah.
That to me just that's held that's such rough. Little narrative purpose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it definitely had narrative purpose. It was his whole anti-commercial thing because he worked for a giant corporation. So, like, you know.
Well, I mean, again, in a movie where it was hard for me to find something, that held the least narrative value to me for what my overall arching interpretation of the film was.
Yeah.
Like, to me, like, yes, it's supporting the idea that it was, like, anti-consumerism or commercialism. But, again, to me, that was just, it was a way to show up, but it wasn't a very effective way, in my opinion.
Yeah, fair it just, enough. Like, it just seemed out of place for you.
Yeah, it just, like, to me, the whole argument of, like, the whole speech he's giving to, like, the whole crew, like, in the basement.
Moments. Yeah, where it's just like, you're not fucking like, khakis.
Exactly. So cool. That, to me, held, like, that to me fit Fight Club better and made and fit in the film more appropriately.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
This is hard.
Zrit.
Yeah. I think it's one of the more like random like slept on moments, but like and I'm not even sure why I like it so much. Like as far as the impact of it, I think it just like seems very like profound to me, like in a weird way. But that moment where Tyler pulls that random clerk out of the gas station. And, like, holds him at gunpoint, like, behind the gas station. Like, and he's just like, what'd you go to school for? And he's just like, oh, it's veterinarian. And he's like, okay, I'm keeping your ID. If you're, I'm going to check on you in 2 weeks. If you are not on the way to becoming a veterinarian, you will be dead. And, like, and then he walks away. And then he looks in the revolver. There's no bullets. He's never going to shoot him. But he's just like, why'd you do that? What was the point of that? And he's just like, tomorrow's going to be the best day of Raymond Cahill's life. His food will taste better than food you and I have ever tasted. Because he got like another chance at life. And I'm not sure what exactly about it I like so much.
I actually think I know, and I might, I'll cut this out if you want it. But I think that is, as I watched that scene, it's almost like you came into focus for me. Because that reminds me of, like, how you, like, you know, talk to the people that you care about, that you're, like, you have these strong opinions, and sometimes, like, I almost feel like you would, in the right or wrong circumstances, go to those lengths to, like, push someone to be better.
Wow.
And as I was watching it, I was like, I literally kind of thought, huh. Okay.
Wow.
Like, that was a very Russell scene. Like... Huh.
Well, I'm glad I picked that one. I mean, wow. Anyway, I'm just processing this. So then, and for my least favorite, this is so hard. Oh my gosh. I don't know, because even like the really like messed up stuff, like I still find like that meaning behind it. Like him, it's probably the scene where the narrator beats the ever living crap out of Jared Leto and just destroys his face. Mm. Because that really is a rough scene to watch.
Yeah.
But like...
Like, you clock Jared Leto, and then for the rest of the film, it does
He's
not
look unrecognizable.
Like Jared, you don't recognize Jared Leto.
They could have used a different actor, and you wouldn't even know.
No, I wouldn't have known.
But it's probably that one, because that really is uncomfortable. I'm also not in love with Marla's monologue about the dress she's wearing.
Oh, the thrift store dress?
Yeah, like, she mentions, like sex crime, like victimology and stuff. Like, it's kind of weird. Like,
yeah.
So those two I'm not super in love with, but like, I still see
the purpose behind
like the
them.
Meaning behind it enough that like that I don't hate it.
But
to find a moment, it's probably one of those two.
Okay.
That's the weird thing about kind of this whole movie, is that like, even the bad parts, you see the merit.
I know, exactly.
It's
so strange.
That's what I mean. Like, it's hard to pick a truly like terrible, like, like, cinematography speaking, like...
Yeah, because the movie is just shot so well, and, like, and its vision it is so clear without being clear.
It's like an old movie where you can sit there and say, like, oh, yeah, the lightsaber jump cut was...
Well, that was rough.
Yeah. There's not that excuse. So it's like, narratively speaking, what... Like, and again, I think it comes to the whole idea of what your interpretation of the film is.
Yeah. But that being said, I am so into that, like, anti-consumerism, like, mentality. So that really, really, like, is, like, one of my favorite things about it, too.
I'll start calling you out on that, then.
Okay.
He's going to call you out in, like, the weirdest ways possible. It's not going to make any sense.
Someone's going to be like, what?
Well, how about... out of 10 chemical burns, what would you rate this movie?
Out of the chemical burns.
It has to be chemical burns.
I'm going to agree pretty on point with the Rotten Tomatoes rating.
Yeah.
I think about 7 out of 10 is about where I'd put it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a good movie, but it's not something I would ever go out of my way to watch again.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
I think for me, I didn't hate the movie. Its rewatchability was pretty solid. Because there's a different way to, you know, view it. It's like Total Recall to a certain degree, where you can watch it from two different lenses.
Yeah.
Except in this case, in my opinion, you could watch this from even more lenses.
32 different lenses.
But overall, I mean, I love these kind of... To me, there's two different ways to kind of succeed with a film, or honestly, any main form of media. There's a way to entertainment-wise succeed, which, you know, like, Troll 2 kind of succeeded in, and it's like...
Yeah.
It didn't succeed narratively, and, like...
It's not taking itself seriously.
But like, it is entertaining.
Artistically, yeah. It did succeed, but you were entertained.
Yeah.
Walked away from the movie entertained.
10 out of 10, we'll watch again.
Exactly. However, then you have the artistic way to succeed, and to me, you succeed in that point where either you're infamously known in history for creating this idea, or... your audience or intended audience is left still talking about that film after it is over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, you are left seeing there was something to chew on and something to talk about.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm going to give it a solid 8.7 chemical burns.
Nice.
All right.
You know, again, it's, I love the grit and the pace. The pacing is probably the one thing that kind of slows it down a little bit. Like, it was a 2-hour film and I'm like, it didn't feel like 2 hours, but it was a little like,
yeah,
it was very long
on certain points.
Yeah,
so I was
lengthy.
Like,
yeah,
because there's a lot to unpack.
There is a lot to unpack.
Exactly. I think it's because just the amount of content shoved into this 2 hours, you're not really given much to like chew on for each individual sequence that you want to focus on. Like, you can take time to sit there and digest it, but like, there's not enough time to really like, wait, who, what, when, where, why? You just don't have time to sit there and answer all those questions with what it gives you.
Yeah.
And I think it's just too much content crammed in a small amount of time that makes it feel long.
Yeah, for sure.
That's fair.
That's good. I feel like I have to put it up there because I just love every single moment of it. Like I was, like, jittering last night. I was so excited to watch it with
you
guys.
Oh, trust me. I know. I was... You... after a certain point, and for obvious reasons, you stopped doing it. But for a second, I was about to be like, Russell, I need you to stop going. Did you see it? Because I was like, no, Russell, I didn't see it. Now, can I watch the movie?
Just the very beginning, just a little flash.
You almost became that moviegoer for a second.
I know.
But you stopped after doing it twice, and so I didn't say anything. But I was like on the brink of it. But I also knew it's because you were excited. And so I was so like, excited. I know it's not out of like being a jerk. It's just him, like, he's excited about it.
I was like, I'm so excited, but I'm gonna throw it up there. Like, I'm not gonna give it a 10 because this movie is definitely freaking weird, and it's a great movie to show people, but like, I wouldn't like sit down and just like watch this movie like, by myself, and especially that now that I've seen it like so many times.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna throw like a 9.5.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not gonna give it the full 10, but I just enjoy the heck out of it. I love the cinematography. I love like the random like weird like narration, like they mentioned one thing in the movie and then it's like a running gag the whole rest of the is so strange,
like, but the whole I am Jax,
yeah, I am Jax anything, yeah, yeah, like just so strange, but a 9.5 for sure.
I think I would go with 8 out of 10 chemical burns for me. I really did enjoy it, like really overall I thoroughly enjoyed it. The only reason I'm knocking off 2 points is just because I wanted to be surprised by the twist. And because I wasn't looking for, oh, what's the twist? Because I never do that. You know, I wasn't looking for it, but I saw it. I was like, you know, it could have been a little more subtle so that I could have still been like, you know, surprised. But then again, like I said, I am tuned into those kinds of movies just because I've seen so many of them. So that could have also been part of it. But just for me, as a person who's very attuned to it and wanted to be surprised and I wasn't, I'm knocking off a couple points. But that's really the only reason. Because I did really, really enjoy all of it. I love movies that have a lot to unpack and a lot of, well, what's real, what isn't, what actually happened, what didn't, who exists, you know, like, do any of them exist, you know? I love that kind of stuff because it's just like, it's so cool when it's done well.
Yeah.
And this movie does it very, very, very well. So kind of like Samuel said, I'm not, and like you said, this isn't a movie I would just sit down and watch by myself.
Yeah.
But like, if there was someone that I felt like would appreciate it or would at least, you know, have thoughts about it, you know, I might throw it on and be like, hey, you know, check this thing out. I want to see what you think of it. And like, you know, and put it
or
on for them.
Or hadn't seen it before or something like that.
Right. Know. Like I might show this to like my sister, you know, because I doubt she's seen it before. And I'd be like, hey, you want to watch this movie? And just like throw it on and see what she thinks.
Like the environment we saw it in, I think was like kind of like the perfect environment to watch it. Like someone's seen it. And then having that other person kind of introduce you to it.
Yeah. I think that's the way to watch this movie. Of course, obviously, I don't know. I do just kind of think this is a movie best watched, even if your friend hasn't seen it, with somebody.
Yeah.
Like, it's best watched with at least one other person. So that's what I would recommend if you're gonna watch it. I mean, obviously, I should have said that at the beginning when we said to pause and then go watch it. But if you've listened all the way through and you still want to go watch it, I suggest, you know, grabbing a friend that you think would enjoy it, maybe who hasn't had it spoiled for them by a podcast, and sit down with them and just, like, you know, and because it gives you a lot to talk about. Yes, like, if nothing else, it's a really great conversation starter.
Or, at the very least, a great drinking game.
Drinking game?
Drinking game.
What's the drinking game?
I don't know. We best drinking game for
ages. John!
Oh, come on. If you've both seen the movie before, you can turn it into a drinking game. All right.
Of Banterbox. We have to come up with what the drinking game would be for each movie.
I am so good at coming up with drinking games.
All right, Russell, what's the drinking game for this movie?
Drink every time someone mentions soap.
Okay.
Drink every time that you see two people fighting on screen.
Okay.
Drink.
We'll say that you have to come up with at least 3 rules for the drinking game.
And then let me get one more. Drink every time the narrator mentions Jack.
Yeah.
I take a shot when Bob dies because he's a very important character.
Yes, you need to take a shot for Robert Paulson.
When Bob dies. And then...
pouring out for the boy.
Drink every time the narrator punches himself. Meta or non-meta.
Yeah, meta or non-meta. Which is a lot.
It's a lot.
You're going to get very drunk watching this movie. I actually kind of want to do that as like our end segment. What would the drinking game be? So I might make that a new thing. Because that's actually fun.
Yep.
Told you.
But yeah, do you guys have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
don't think so.
I don't think but I have to give I have to give an honorable mention, and I have to because it was just brought to my attention. It's a tie for favorite for me. Favorite moment. I know it's a little bit past, but it was just brought to my attention. Them raiding the trash can for the fat man.
Oh my god.
That was so fun.
That was really
the
fun.
The richest, greatest fat in the world, the fat in the land. Throws him a bag of fat and then passing it to him over the barbed wire
and
he's
like, don't pull it,
He's trying to catch it in his hands.
And they they're like going and selling it, and they say to the camera like, we're selling their fat back to them, and I'm just like, wow, this is crazy.
It's insane.
It reminds me of, and this makes this is so like weird that this is the tie-in I have, but it reminded me of in Zootopia when he like takes the popsicle and melts it down, and then he turns it into 50 popsicles and sells them all for a profit,
And then sells the sticks wood, as cherry wood.
Yes, to like to the little thing. That's what that reminded me of.
Oh my gosh.
But, yes.
Underrated movie, Zootopia.
Honestly, I love that movie so much. It's
really good. It's really good.
One of the best of the newer Disney films.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Hands down. Anytime that movie is on TV, I will watch that movie.
So next week, Zootopia on the podcast. Everyone tune in.
No, next week is Revenge of the Sith. My favorite movie of all time.
It's Samuel's favorite one.
I love that movie.
So we're going to have a good time next week.
Yeah.
You'll hear Samuel never stop talking.
I have so much to say.
Well, just a reminder, y'all can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment. And on Twitter at artists_mad. We have Netherdeep coming up in the next, 2 weeks?
It's a week from...
A week and 2 days.
When this comes out, it'll be a week.
Okay, when this comes out, yeah, it'll be a week away. We're going to be streaming on Tuesday nights. What is the start time,
7
Russell?
7 p.m.
7 p.m.
is our official start time.
7 p.m. on Twitch. It's twitch.tv/madartistco.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. Twitch.tv/madartistco.
7 p.m. EST.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will be posting.
7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
We will be posting all of our streams to YouTube, so you can watch it after the fact if you would like.
Yeah.
But of course, if you would like to watch us live, we'd love to have you on there. And our lovely Sam Marie will be our stream manager. So anyone who, you know, mentions anything in the chat or anything like that, you'll be hearing back from her. Because we actually want to engage with the chat on there. You can visit our website for more information about all our upcoming and current projects. That's madartistsco.com. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests for us to review in the future, you can message our social media or email us at banterbox.madartists@gmail.com. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. It really helps us out. And we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.